Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. I've got a roving mic, which is better than standing behind these here. So thank you very much for the introduction. I'm really pleased to be here in Istanbul for the third time. It's a long time since I was here. It was about 5 years ago, and then I came about 8 years ago for the first time. I'm always happy to be back, and especially to see some old friends, especially Nerman Akinsel, who you mentioned, whom I know very well. It's my wife's first time here. She's not here today. She's going on a tour of Istanbul today, but if you're coming to the dinner tonight, you might meet her tonight. I've told her, if there's any dancing, not to become involved, because in my experience, if you start dancing, you can't stop. Everyone keeps dancing, so I've told her to sit down. That's what I'll be doing. I'm warning you. Well, thank you for the complimentary words about the journal. Sadly, we're not the top impact factor. We're eighth in the league, but we're all very close at the top. And we've been moving from 20th to 10th to 8th. And my ambition is that we will become the top impact factor journal before I retire from the journal. I've been with it for about 5 years now. I don't know how much longer I've got left, maybe another 5 years with the journal, but my ambition is to leave it at the top of the impact factor tree. Now, it's very nice to be back in Turkey, because I was yesterday, when I was in my hotel room, I was correcting proofs for the journal, and one of the proofs I corrected was from Turkey. So this is nice. It was a very good study about an adolescent health study run here. I think it's called REAM, run in Turkey. And it made me think about the Turkish contribution to the journal. You're one of the top 10 countries that submit papers to the journal, but unfortunately, you're not one of the top 10 countries that get published. So I think it's quite good for me to be here. There are sort of issues with some of the papers that come from some parts of the world. And I'm going to talk about how I see the publishing process and how I can help people to get published. I'm not going to look at all of nursing research, because that would be too big. But we've got time for questions at the end, in discussion. So I'm very happy to take questions. And I'll be around for coffee. I won't be around all day today, but I'll be around for coffee. And my email will be at the end of the presentation. You can get my business card if you want from me. I'm very happy to take questions after I've gone. Right, so through the eyes of the editor, those are the eyes of the editor. You're very familiar with eyes in Turkey, because everywhere I go I see eyes and necklaces and rings and things like that. So I thought I'd give you a view of really the publishing process through the eyes of the editor. But I think that this next slide is really how most people view the publishing process, unfortunately. Now, I'm going to keep an eye on the time. I'm also an author as well as an editor. What the chair didn't say, as well as being editor of the Journal of Advanced Nursing, I'm also a full-time academic. I don't do the work of the journal full-time. It's only done between 6:30 in the morning and 8:00 in the morning before I go to work. My day job is as an academic doing research and publishing. So like you, I submit to journals and I get rejected. So I know what it's like. And I think this is how we see the publishing process. This is you or me with our manuscript, and we want to get to the end. And on the way, there are people trying to trip us up, hack us down, knock us on the head. And I know that's what it seems like, but really, it's not meant to be like that. The process of getting a paper published is meant to be helpful, and even if it doesn't always seem helpful. And what we're trying to do is to ensure that we publish the highest quality work possible, and that if you get accepted, that the work that you get accepted is of the highest possible quality by the time it gets published. Quite often, those of you who've been published, and I certainly noticed this myself, the papers that you submit to the journal often don't look like the ones that are finally published. A lot happens to it on the way. A lot of changes, and then a lot of other editorial work goes on to bring it up to that standard. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the work that you submit to the highest possible standard. If you see the process like that, then you should be a little bit more positive about this process here. We get over 1,000 manuscripts a year. In fact, we get something like 1,400 manuscripts a year. It's growing all the time. We only publish 300, so the publication rate is around lower than 20%. So everything being equal, you have a 1 in 5 chance of being published, which is okay, it's quite good. So what you've got to focus on is how do people get to the end of that process, not how do people get destroyed along the way. So it is difficult. There are things to do, there are things you've got to pay attention to, but it's not impossible to get published in this journal or in any other journal. So I hope you can see these slides okay from the back. Really, the process of editing is about quality assurance. I'm not going to go through each of the steps in detail, but what I want to try and get across in this slide is what the different steps are for. And this is how you would experience submitting a paper and hopefully having it accepted by a journal. The first process is submission. And the submission is all done online these days. Every high-quality journal is online. We don't really deal with any hard copy at all. And while we still publish a hard copy of the journal, we actually only produce about 100 of those now. The majority of what we publish goes online. Now, the submission process is in your hands, but it's our responsibility to give you copious instructions about how to submit the paper. And I will talk about those instructions or guidance later on. But we will tell you what the standards are, and we expect papers to be of the highest international standard for a journal like the Journal of Advanced Nursing. So we give you guidance on authorship, on ethics, and on what the content should look like, and on other aspects like international standards for presenting different kinds of research. I'll touch on these as I go through my presentation. But again, please bear in mind there's plenty of time for questions afterwards, so don't be afraid to ask me anything about the publication process that might not be clear. When a paper is submitted to the journal, it's looked at by me initially, it comes to my inbox on the system, and I make a very quick decision as to whether it's going to go into the system or it's going to be rejected. And that decision is made very quickly, usually within 24 hours of you submitting a paper. And I make those decisions based on whether the paper looks to me as if it's followed the guidance for the journal. I don't have time to read 1,400 papers a year. I've got to look for some very quick indicators of whether the paper has followed the guidance, and whether the title is attractive, whether it looks as if it's going to be of interest, and whether it looks as if, mainly, does it look as if it's going to get through the reviewing process. I don't always get it right, I'm quite sure of that, but I have to make decisions quickly to get the paper back to you so you can think about submitting somewhere else. But the next thing, if the paper does get into the system, the next thing that you will be aware of is the peer review system. And the peer review system is a system whereby, I'm sure you know this, we use experts, clinicians, expert researchers, sometimes an expert statistician, if it's a very quantitative paper, to look at the paper and to give us a view on whether the paper is of the right quality. The reviewers don't make a decision, they make a recommendation, and the editors make the decision. I don't make that decision, my editors who work for me make that decision. There are two kinds of review system. One is blind or double blind. So if you submit a paper and I'm reviewing it, I don't know who you are, you don't know who I am. And that protects both parties from some problems that might arise if they knew who the person was. However, I just wanted to draw your attention to the fact that increasingly these days, especially with the higher quality open access online journals like Biomed Central and PLOS One, for example, these journals use an open review system where the reviewer knows who the author is and the author knows who the reviewer is, and the reviews are published alongside the paper. So just be aware that the system is changing, and there's a big debate about whether open or closed review systems are best. There are arguments both ways, but you've got to be aware, if you're submitting to a journal, what kind of peer review system it uses. I'm very much in favour of open reviews, but my editors are not, so we still use a closed review system. We've got a democracy in my journal. I don't get to do everything I want, unfortunately. I'd far prefer to have a dictatorship, but that's the way things go. After the paper has come back from the reviewers, my editors, who are all excellent and experts in their own field, they make a decision about the paper, and they will also give you an input, a feedback about the paper. If the paper is being rejected at that stage, they will tell you why. It should be clear, should be clear. If the paper's got to be revised, they will give you an idea of what the revisions have to be. You know, so you shouldn't be in any doubt what you've got to do if you have to revise a paper. However, sometimes my editors get conflicting reviews. Some reviewers will say accept, some will say reject, some will say, well, with some, you know, if you get three reviewers, one might say reject, one might say accept, one might say revise. So the editor has to make a decision as to which route he wants you to go down, he or she wants you to go down. But really, it's up to you to take those points and use them to improve the paper. If you respond appropriately to review comments, and I'll talk about that at the end of the session, if you respond appropriately, you're almost guaranteed to have your paper published. So if you get through the initial stage and your paper isn't accepted immediately, they never are, and you get revisions to do, you should celebrate, because it's good. The door's open, you should attend to those revisions, and if you do them properly, as I say, you're almost guaranteed to get your paper accepted. The people who don't get accepted at that stage are the people who don't deal appropriately with the reviewer's comments. Then you have to revise the paper. Sometimes they can be quite big revisions, sometimes they are just very minor things. We don't really classify them now into minor or major, but sometimes you will have pages of review rewriting to do, sometimes you'll only have one or two minor comments to do, but you must do them all. Again, I'll come back to this later in the lecture, and you might want to, in the session, you might want to ask me more about it then. Then, if the paper is accepted, it's time to have a party. You say, that's great. You should be happy at this point. But the process isn't finished when the paper's accepted. The paper then goes to production. This takes a few weeks, where the paper that you write on an A4 Word document gets turned into a PDF which looks like the paper. Then you have to check it and correct it. It's sent to you, it's sent to me, it's sent to proofreaders, and you should read every single line, because it's the last chance you've got to correct the paper. Any mistakes that are made after that point or not picked up, it's very, very difficult to correct them after the paper's been published. We can print other notes beside it, but it's very difficult to make corrections to the actual paper. So do take the correction stage properly. If you do get accepted and you get approved, don't just say, good, it's good, and send it back. Do read it carefully, because we all make mistakes. Then, finally, the paper will be published. And these days, your paper will actually, in my journal and in many journals in the top stables like Elsevier and Wiley, your paper will be published actually as soon as it's accepted. We will publish a pre-proof copy. So we'll publish the Word version of your paper online with a DOI, a digital object identifier, which is unique for the paper, and people will be able to read that version. But there's a watermark saying this is not corrected yet. So the paper becomes visible as soon as it's accepted. Then once the production copy is made, that old copy disappears and the production copy goes up, and that's the final accepted and final published version of the paper. And the DOI and the URL, finding it online, remain exactly the same. You will never receive a hard copy of the paper. To get a hard copy, print it out. if you want one. But we don't deal with hard copy at all. Okay, so let's go through one or two points of getting your research into a published paper. I'm sure that's a familiar sight to many people, writing a paper surrounded by all the papers you've got. This is a female colleague of mine. She's got her hand cream, her biscuits, her hair grip, her mobile phone. I took this from her Facebook page with her permission. And my point to her was, this is not a good way to write a paper. What you should do is get rid of all those, get rid of all the articles and write what you want to write, then find the articles and support what you want to say. If you sit surrounded by a pile of manuscripts like this or proofs like this, all you do is read the proofs, you don't write the paper. But nevertheless, that's the familiar stage. You've got all the knowledge, you've done the research, you want to get it into a published state. So what are the stages of this process, and what are the things that I see as being problematic sometimes in the papers that are submitted? I think one of the things that people fail to understand is the publishing process, and I've already talked a bit about the publishing process. I think what you've got to think about when you're submitting a paper is think about the editors, the editor-in-chief and the editors. Don't worry about the reviewers, first of all. Don't worry about the general public. You've got to think, what do the editors, and particularly the editor-in-chief, want? And the editor-in-chief is the first person to see the paper, and he or she, and I'm judging from my own experience, we're very superficial people. All we want to see is a paper that's got a good title, an interesting title, it's clear, the abstract is written in the style of the journal, if we flick through the paper, the references are right, and it's neatly presented, and it's not too long, or not too short, whatever, you know, it looks about right. That's really what we're looking at. We don't have time to read the whole thing. So make sure that you get the abstract right. Make sure that the title is clear, not too long. We prefer you not to mention the country in the title, for example. I can come back to that later. Just make sure that you do use the right referencing system. Make sure you use the right headings and subheadings. These are things that we can check off just in seconds, really. So make sure you get them right. And you're 90% of the way to getting your paper past me, anyway. So think first about the editor-in-chief, then the editors, who are looking for similar things, but looking in a little bit more depth. Once you've pleased the editors, you then need to think about pleasing the reviewers. And what you've got to appreciate when you're writing a paper for submission to a high-quality international journal is that the reviewers should be, we hope, experts in their field. So you've got to treat them as if they're experts. If you're writing about clinical work, make sure you get it right. If you're writing about complex research methodology, qualitative or quantitative, make sure you get them right. One of the most common errors, one of the most common complaints from reviewers in papers, it doesn't always lead to rejection, but it certainly leads to revision, is they say, "This, it's not clear what the author has done." So it's especially the case in qualitative research. How did you get from interviewing 30 people through a process to these themes that came out? These days we expect that to be explained clearly. And that's one of the common errors. But even in quantitative research, not entirely clear how they did the analysis. Everything's got to be clear, crystal clear for them. So think about the reviewers. Realise they're experts, treat them like experts, and again, you've more chance of getting through that part of the process. Then finally, you've got to think about your audience at the end, but you won't reach your audience if you don't get through the editors and you don't get through the reviewers, so you've got to think about the steps that you've got to go through to get there. So I want to talk, you know, take you on to looking at one or two of the steps in that process that you should pay attention to. Now, I know some people in the audience might have heard me speaking before, I don't know. I always try at some point to bring in the four rules of writing. And these are my four rules of writing. And these are the things that have helped me to write over the years. And they're things that have helped my PhD students and colleagues. And they might be helpful for you. So this is partly about how to get a paper published, what are the steps you need to take, but also about good writing technique. Remember that most papers are rejected at the end of the process because they're poorly written. Not the science, it's that they're poorly written, so you've got to pay attention to the writing. By the way, it's very nice that people are taking notes and photographing the slides. I don't mind that at all. I'm very willing to send the slides to anybody who wants them, or to give them to you after the lecture, or to put them on my slide share on LinkedIn, and you can find them very easily there and download them. So you're welcome to have the slides if you want them. So the first rule of writing, the most important one by far, is to read the guidelines for the journal. Or if you're writing a book or writing an article or a blog or anything like that, read the guidelines. We put them there so that you can see them. And at the beginning of the process, my stage in the process as editor-in-chief, the most common reason for papers to be rejected at that stage is they haven't followed the guidelines. And honestly, we don't have time. The title can be fantastic. The abstract can look quite interesting. If it's not in the right order, then I'm very much inclined to reject the paper, because I know that the person has not read the guidance and that the rest of the paper is very unlikely to follow the guidelines. So it's a shame. It might be a very good paper. Some other journal might benefit from it. But I can't afford to be putting that into the system when it has to be changed. Also, very occasionally, if the title looks really, really interesting, I might ask you to change it and resubmit the paper. But I can't emphasize enough how we expect people to follow the guidelines at the beginning of the process. And every journal that I've published in is exactly the same. And I don't know how much your view is across the Atlantic on American journals, but in North America, anything wrong with the guidance and your paper will just be sent back. And it won't be sent back for revision, it'll be rejected. So, I mean, we're quite particular in the UK, but in the USA they're very particular about it. So it's easy to get right, you read the guidance. I'll come back to the guidelines in a minute. When you're writing a paper, set yourself some realistic targets and count the words as you're writing. I think one of the big problems in getting research published is that it never gets written. So, people haven't got the time to write. So try and write to targets. Try and set yourself targets every time you sit down to write, or try and set yourself a target every day. Modest targets, 500 words, 250 words. Don't sit down and think the paper's going to be 5,000 words long, I've got to write all that at once, because you won't have time to do it. My advice is don't set aside a whole day to write, or a whole week to write, because nobody can write for a whole day or a whole week. You know, you can only write for short periods of time. Even professional novelists and writers only write for intense but short periods in the day. It's hard work, it's mentally exhausting. So try and do short pieces. You've got less time than a professional writer. I mean, I'm guessing that Orhan Pamuk can get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and write till lunchtime, but we don't have that time. He's a professional full-time writer. You know, we've got other things to do. So try and work your writing into short quality times. I've got no view on whether you should write in Turkish and have it translated into English, or try to write in English. I don't care. At the end of the process, what we get has got to be a manuscript written in perfect English. And that is a problem for manuscripts coming from this part of the world, from Turkey, to be specific. So they have to be written in very, very good English. How you do that, I don't mind. You've got to seek criticism. I'll talk about that. Don't write your manuscripts in the quiet and slip it off to a journal. Let people see it before it goes. And the most important adage, or the most important motto you should have in your mind, and someone emailed me yesterday to say, I heard you say this about 4 years ago, and I've never forgotten it, and I've used it, is to treat a rejection as the beginning of the next submission. As soon as you get rejected, just say, where's it going to go next? Don't hesitate. Okay? If you're writing 5 or 6 manuscripts, which a busy academic might be doing, your top priority is the manuscript you're writing until a paper comes back for revision. If that paper comes back for revision, that then becomes your priority. Unless a paper comes back that's been rejected, then your priority is to get that submitted somewhere else. So try and have a production line mentality that gets the most important things out of the way first. Most important, resubmission. Next, revision, then writing manuscripts. Don't concentrate on the manuscripts that aren't finished. Concentrate on the ones that are finished or nearly finished. Oops, nothing happened. So the guidelines are pretty easy to find. I'm not advertising my journal particularly, but that's the landing page for my journal. The impact factor is out of date, as you'll see, because we're higher than that now. But anyway, the point behind this is that the guidelines are on the landing page. That's the same for any high-quality journal. The guidelines should be on the landing page. Don't panic if you click on the guidelines, because there are something like 100 pages of guidance, plus URLs and links and blogs, YouTubes, all sorts of things there. You have to find what guidance you need. What sort of paper are you publishing? Is it a quantitative paper? You look at one set of guidance. Is it a review? You look at one set. Don't sit down and read it all. The only person who ever reads all the guidance once a year is me when we revise it, and we're constantly revising it. But everything, we think that everything you need to know about submitting a paper to the journal is in the guidance. So journal guidelines are the simple things that you need to get right. This is not, as they say, not rocket science. It's not complicated. Get the length right, you know. Think about how long the paper's got to be. I warn you that we will not accept papers that are over length. 5 words, 10 words, 50 words, you know, maybe, but if it's 5,500 words, it will be sent back to you. Okay, so do get the word count right. It's the easiest thing for us to check, for my managing editor to check. And we specify what the length means. It's from introduction to end of discussion. Some journals, it's abstract to end of discussion. Some journals, it's introduction to end of references. They're all different. Check specifically what the length means. Ours is 5,000 words from introduction to end of discussion. Also check the layout. Now, the layout is just, we actually specify a layout, although I know it's online. We recommend that you use size 12 times Roman font and double space it and leave some wide margins. Even online, this is important. It's much easier to read for us. It looks as if the paper is a proper academic paper. So do pay attention to layout. Don't change the font halfway through. Don't use lots of italics and bold and coloured. Anything you've done to the manuscript on the way, tracking or commenting, make sure it's taken out before the paper is finally submitted. The organisation of the paper, this is easy to get right because we tell you what to do. By organisation, what comes first? Abstract, introduction, the methods, the results, discussion. That's what I mean by organisation. We can't, don't play about with the organisation. And finally, the referencing system. Again, these days, using RefMan and EndNote should be relatively easy to get right, but people still get it wrong. Our paper, our journal uses a Harvard style, in fact we're moving to the APA style referencing, and if I see a paper with Vancouver style, I just know that that person hasn't read the guidance. I feel insulted, I'm very sensitive like that, so I say it's rejected. So get it right, okay, it's easy. You don't have to get every full stop and comma right, because we have macros that sort all that out, but we can't do anything with Vancouver system, it has to be Harvard. And likewise, if you're submitting to a Vancouver style journal, make sure you use Vancouver style and not Harvard. So, seeking criticism. Very, very important that you seek some help when you write. Find a critical friend. So, don't find that sort of person, okay? We all know people like that with whom we work, who are always hypercritical, highly critical, very negative of everything you do. They're no use, just don't bother with them at all. But don't find that sort of person either who always says everything is good, because that's no help either. Your writing isn't terrible, your writing isn't perfect, your writing can always be improved. So find, sorry ladies, a very sexist picture of a man helping a woman, but you know, find somebody who's been up the mountain, who's willing to put their hand down and help you up. It may be a man or a woman, I don't care, but I'll just use that image. But you know what I mean, somebody who can help you, who's genuinely helpful. And these people very quickly become apparent, and you should be willing to help them as well. The best person to help you with your paper if they're a nice person, is the person sitting next to you or the person in the office next to you. You don't have to find an expert necessarily. So yeah, see somebody pointing to the people next to you. Exactly. Use your friends, you know, you use them to read. It doesn't have to be somebody who's senior or particularly expert. What you want is somebody who will read the paper and say, I don't understand that point. If somebody doesn't understand something, that's fatal. A reviewer won't understand it. An editor won't understand it. So clarify things. I give my papers occasionally to my PhD students to look at. And they say, why are you giving it to me? I said, I want you to read it. Is there anything there you don't understand? They often say, well, none of it. But I mean, you know, I say, well, you know, but what specifically is wrong? Tell me. So anybody can help you, but do make sure you seek criticism. If you don't, you almost are almost guaranteed to be rejected. Right, so that's all I want to say about the four rules of writing. What I want to look at, I'm jumping a bit, I'm just watching the time, but I want to look at the international standards for publishing. And again, this is what I would call an easy shot for an editor-in-chief to check. When we see a paper that claims to be a systematic review or a randomised controlled trial or a qualitative paper, it's very easy for me to check, is have they followed the guidance that we tell them to follow? If they haven't, the paper's fatally flawed. It can't go any further in the journal. So do make sure that you check these. Now, all the guidance that you would possibly need regarding any kind of paper that you can publish, apart from survey research, there's no international standard yet for survey research, but every other kind of paper, qualitative, quantitative, diagnostic, randomised controlled trial, systematic review, everything's contained on the Equator webpage. And this is one webpage, if you haven't looked at it before, it would be really worth, after today, looking at it. Lots of the guidance is in other languages. I'm pretty sure there's Turkish versions of some of the guidance, but, you know, your academic English is probably good enough to read the guidance. But, again, there's lots of guidance there. I want to focus in on a couple of things. First of all, I want to focus in on the consort guidance. And the consort guidance is what we expect to see used if you've produced a randomised controlled trial or any kind of experimental work. So the easiest way to find is to Google them. And if you Google or go through Equator, you'll be taken to the consort webpage, which looks like this. It's not terribly clear there, but there's a checklist, 25-item checklist, and a flow diagram. We expect to see the checklist completed. It doesn't get published along with the paper, but we expect to see it completed. The checklist is quite straightforward. Have you done this? Have you done that? And we want to know that you've done it. And clearly, you have to have done it. You don't just tick yes on it. Or if it's no, you have to explain why you didn't do something. For example, if it's an experiment and it's quasi-experimental, you may not have randomised. You need to explain that. There's also a flow diagram. And the flow diagram, I'm sure you've seen these, looks like this. It's not the best picture. Looks like that. And the great thing about the flow diagram is it's available as a Word document, and you can simply download it and use it. You don't have to draw your own. Use it, and we'll paste it straight into the produced paper. And the flow diagram for a randomised controlled trial helps you to trace every potential person. So all the potential people who could have been in your clinical trial have to be numbered. Excuse me. So if you looked at a sampling frame of 1,000 people, that has to be there. Then you have to trace every single person right down to the ones who were survived in the treatment arm and the ones who survived in the control arm. Or if you have 3 arms or 4 arms, you can add them on to the diagram. The point is that you should be able to count all the way up and get to the number at the top, so nobody is missing. And if you're those of you who do clinical trials, which may not be quite the thing in management, but you can do intention to treat. You can see if the extent of dropout at any level affected the outcome. So you can actually do the intention to treat. The numbers are there on the diagram. Very similar to that are the PRISMA guidelines, and the PRISMA guidelines are about how to report systematic reviews and meta-analysis. I'm just going to focus on these two sets because that's the most common type. And again, there's a flow diagram. You can Google Prisma easily. There's a checklist and a flow diagram. We expect to see the checklist and we expect to see the flow diagram. And the flow diagram does exactly the same as the consort one. It traces the papers that you could have found, that you did find, and how you filtered them down to the ones that you actually reviewed. And again, it's a Word document. You can paste it in, and we will publish it like that in the journal paper. So if I see a paper that claims to be a systematic review, the first thing I do is take up the PDF of the paper, scan down to the end where the figure should be. If I see a flow diagram, I'm relieved. If I don't see one, I'm sorry. It's the paper will be rejected because you clearly haven't. That's the most fundamental data of the review. It's not included. Likewise, for a randomised control trial, I expect to see the flow chart. If it's not there, that's an easy shot, as I say, for me to get rid of the paper. Right. Next, we're three more points to make. If you do nothing else today, I think it would be really good if you went and looked at the COPE webpage. I say this to every group of people I meet. COPE is the Committee on Publication Ethics. It's international now. I'm absolutely sure there is Turkish guidance on COPE available. If not, you can tell me, we'll tell COPE, we can get someone to translate them. Most good journals, and the Journal of Advanced Nursing is certainly signed up, we adhere to COPE standards. And the COPE standards on publication ethics really tell you how to adhere to publication standards. There's a really, really nice web page, and on the web page there are codes of practice for authors, for reviewers, and for editors. And I think there are codes of practice for publishers as well, which are combined with the editors' ones. They're only a few pages long, very simple, very common sense, but they stop you from making ethical mistakes like plagiarism, duplication, fabrication, falsification. We can talk about those in the discussion if you want to. So, very useful to have a look at that. They also tell us as editors how to deal with ethical problems. So, if I suspect that somebody's plagiarised, I pull up the flowchart, I do the first step. It's an algorithm. If the author responds this way, I do that. If they don't respond, I go that way. And it tells you all the way down to what you can finally do. And don't ever think this is something we're not dealing with. I sent an email yesterday to authors who had been suspected of copying another manuscript. Almost all the time, almost every month, I would say, I'm dealing with a case of duplication or plagiarism or authorship disputes, which I'm going to come to. So they're much easier to detect, and they're much more common, we think, than they were before. My bottom line message is just don't get involved. Some people have lost their jobs because they've plagiarised, so just don't ever be tempted. Now, this is a very delicate issue. I'm bringing this up. ICMJ, International Committee of Medical Journal Editors, they've got lots of guidance, ethical guidance, standards, but one thing that they've got authorship and contributorship. And we use a slightly amended version of their guidance on authorship, as does the British Medical Journal. I think we use the same guidance. And their guidance, this is their guidance, which we adopt. They say that if you're an author on a paper, you must have made a contribution to the conception or design of the study and the data collection, or the acquisition of data and the analysis, and you should have drafted the article and agreed the final version to be published. We split it into three ORs because we believe that if you conceived the study or did the data analysis or wrote it, then you should be okay. You don't have to have done all of these things, but everyone has to agree to the final submitted manuscript. They have to. What we're basically saying here is if you follow this guy, if you've adhered to this, you should be an author. If you haven't done that, you shouldn't be. So if you're having a dispute with somebody, you just say, have you done this? We can't sort it out afterwards, but I'm frequently asked to do so. All I can do is write to both parties and say, please sort this out amongst yourselves. But please be aware that if you miss someone off a manuscript, either deliberately or by mistake, and that manuscript gets published, there's no way we can add the name to the manuscript that gets published, okay? That's the last opportunity. So that person's name will never appear on the paper. Their name can appear on PubMed as an author, but it can't appear on the paper. So when someone prints off the paper or downloads the PDF, your name won't be on it. So it's a very serious issue. And everything that's submitted to our journal, and this applies again to most high-quality journals, everything goes through a system called Authenticate. We use a system in the UK called Turnitin for students. It's the same system. This detects similarity between manuscripts. It doesn't tell us whether it's plagiarism or duplication or whatever, but it alerts us to the fact that there's similarity, and we will take action. Now, one of the second last points about international relevance, and one of the points here is that I see a lot of manuscripts from other parts of the world and from the UK that just don't appeal to a wide audience. And some people are very mystified. How do you make your manuscript appealing to a wide audience? It's not very difficult, really. But one of the things is to keep asking yourself whether somebody in another part of the world would be interested or understand it. And a good way to do that is to give it to somebody else. If you've got a colleague in another part of the world, give it to them to have a look at. Don't submit it. Don't let the editor or the reviewer be the first person to point out the error. We reckon on my journal that you should not put the title of the country, the name of the country, in the title of the article. Some journals insist on it, but we've noticed, the Journal of Advanced Nursing, that papers with countries in the title simply do not get cited. Somebody sees a paper that says a randomised controlled trial of management technique 1 versus management technique 2 in Turkey, and that's a turn off. Or in the UK, it's a people say, well, I'm not interested in that. If you miss off the country, people will at least read the abstract and get interested in the paper. You do have to say where the study's taken place, obviously, but that's one thing. So try to make it as broad as possible. So in the abstract, try to make sure that you refer to the global aims. By referring to the global aims, I don't mean international necessarily. I mean, try to have reviewed the international literature. Try and make sure you say how this paper relates to the wider field you're in. If it's just relevant to Turkey or just relevant to Istanbul, it's not suitable for this journal. But if you could make it wider, it may be. Do name the country. Don't try and hide it, of course. And try to, at the end of the paper, again, bring back what the international and the global and the wider consequences of the paper are. It's simple, but it's, some people find it quite difficult. So you've really got to, and don't do things like name your study a small local study in. Don't do things like that. Just say what the science is in the paper, and then let other people decide from the number of people in the study. Let them decide if it's local or interesting. We have an expression: don't shoot yourself in the foot. Go in positively. Don't try and handicap yourself when you write the paper. Now, you must expect to have several revisions. Don't expect to write a paper and submit it and that's it. If you write a paper for submission, you probably go through 5 to 10 different revisions before you submit it. As you get more experienced, you will become better at that. But the process isn't finished there, as I've hinted. You will then have to do revisions for the reviewers, you'll then have to do revisions for the editor-in-chief, you then might have to do revisions for the production. So just expect, as James Michener, a famous writer, said, I'm one of the world's greatest rewriters. He was asked if he was one of the world's greatest writers. So expect to have to work and craft it. Don't expect, well, that's it off, it's finished with. You will have to work hard to get the paper up to the right standard. And also, learning when to let go is very important. Some people have great difficulty knowing when to let go of a manuscript. A manuscript that doesn't get off to the publisher will never get published. And your manuscript won't be perfect. You've got to appreciate that, it's not nothing's perfect. Everything's slightly flawed. So do make sure that you, at some point, make a decision, especially if you're working in a team of people. At what point is this paper going to go off to the publishers and see what they say? Okay, dealing with reviewers' comments. Apply the golden rules of Williams. This is if you get reviewers' comments to deal with, you should be happy, okay? Don't be upset about it. Apply the golden rules. Answer everything that you're asked to answer. Don't ignore things. Do be polite and do answer with evidence. So answering completely. Deal with every point, even if you don't agree with it. So don't ignore points. That's one of the things that really upsets reviewers and editors. We recommend that you make a list and deal with the point. Make a list or make a table. Page, comment, what you've done, where that is, and any other comments you want to make. My advice is to do the comments in red. That does two things. It shows the reviewers and the editors that you've dealt with the points. It also makes them focus on those points and read them. They don't have to read the whole paper again to find what you've done and find more mistakes in it. So be tactical. Focus their attention on what you've done. Answer politely. Don't start with, we completely disagree with the comments, or who the hell are you reviewers, or who on earth are you reviewers, things like that, you know. We encourage our reviewers to be polite. We also want you to be polite. We've all done this, and I've done it. It never helps. Okay, when you're young and naive, you react to things, and it never helps. We're trying to be professional. It's not personal. Okay, we're not trying to insult you, and we don't want you to insult the reviewers in turn. Absolutely. If you disagree with something, don't just say it. Provide a reference. I've never, ever had a paper where I've dealt with the evidence or provided the evidence for something that a reviewer disputed that I haven't had accepted eventually. So you can get around it. Don't see criticism of a sort of fundamental nature where somebody says that's completely wrong. Don't see that as being fatal, because they might be wrong, but you've got to politely convince them about that. Okay, finally, just got a couple of minutes before we finish. Finally, I just wanted to deal with a very important side of publishing. This is slightly off the track now, but when I said at the end of the quality assurance process that papers are published, I think I forgot to point on the right. We have a lot of post-publication scrutiny of papers. Well, that's always been the case, but these days, post-publication scrutiny is instant. Because as soon as a paper is published by my journal, we put it out on Twitter, as soon as it's published. And we link that to our Facebook, we have a blog, we push things out on social media. We have a YouTube site, a podcasting site, I think that's all we've got. You can make use of those too. We strongly encourage people, when they publish a paper, to make a podcast, make a YouTube. It's very easy. You can do it with your... My grandson uses my mobile phone, and I've got a thing called Capture, and he presses it on my mobile phone, makes a YouTube, and it automatically goes up on my YouTube feed. I've got to delete some of them, but you know, so it's very easy to do, and the quality is incredible, you know. So we encourage you to try and promote your paper this way. So we put a lot of effort into it, and so you know, I don't know how many of you use Twitter, but you know, it's happening. You know, get used to it. I'm 61 years old and I use Twitter a lot, so that's very important. Okay, so Twitter can amplify your message very quickly. You know, so if you get a paper published, take the URL, put it in a tweet and send it out. You know, here's an example. This magazine with 2,077 followers, within 3 retweets, reached nearly 20,000 people. Now, not all of those will read the tweet. Even the ones who read the tweet will not necessarily read the link, but imagine if 10% of them did both. That's several hundred people more than you would have reached otherwise. It's a very powerful way to get your message across and out to other people. There's evidence of what we call twitations and twinbacks. There's evidence from research that papers that are sent out on social media get more highly cited. And that's the idea. That's what you want. You want your paper to be read. You want your paper to be cited. We want it to be cited because it helps to increase our citations and increase our impact factor. So we do everything we can to help this. And another study in the field of medicine said the odds of an article being highly cited were significantly increased by mentioning social media. Odds ratio of 2.58, that's huge and highly significant. You don't get many odds ratios of that size in clinical research, for example. So there's clear evidence that pushing your paper out on social media is a good way to get cited. And as I say, I don't know what the social media situation is in Turkey. I know there are some sensitivities over Twitter and things like that, but there are other ways of getting... Twitter's important, but there are other ways of getting material out. And we're actually paying a great deal of attention to this now by the use of altmetrics. We're actually measuring the number of times papers get mentioned in social media. And if you click on a paper, you'll see the altmetrics score. Do be aware, just a final warning, do be aware of the online predatory journals that are out there. I'm sure you're aware of these. Every day we get emails saying, greetings, esteemed professor, please invite you, please submit your paper. Just delete them, just ignore them. They are predatory. They want your money and they want nothing else. I've written a lot about this. I've done podcasts on it. You can get the links if you want. The point is that if you want to check if a journal is genuine on the open access system, check the Directory of Open Access Journals. I also edit Nursing Open. It's on there. It's got a green tick. That means it's been in existence for a year. It's got an international editorial board and a peer review system, and it's meeting its deadlines. If a journal's not on there, you should be highly suspicious of it. Alternatively, if you check Scholarly Open Access, just Google Scholarly Open Access, you'll come to this list, and it will give you a list of predatory publishers and a list of predatory journals. And just be aware that the number of publishers in a five-year period has gone from 18 up to nearly 1,000. It's a huge explosion in this fraudulent, criminal activity. And the number of journals has gone from 126 up to 882. That's generally, it's not just in nursing. So just be very aware, because they'll take your money, they'll take your manuscript, they'll keep the copyright. They might publish it, they might not. If they publish it, it'll be worthless. Nobody will read it, nobody will cite it. And also be aware of hijacked journal websites too. Check that the journal website is genuine. If you're in any doubt, if you get an email from somebody asking you to submit and it gives you a link to a website, I would just ignore it. You find the website yourself, and even then you've got to be careful and check. Anybody who's asking you for money to publish a paper, check them out. If you're interested, and I'm afraid it's only in English, it's not being translated into Turkish, it's being translated into Spanish, that's a different language. Anyway, those of you who read English, there's a book about writing for publication, edited by myself and a colleague, a multi-author book. It's a little bit out of date now, we're going to thinking about updating it, so that's available if you want to have a look at that. It's got some really neat stuff. It covers most of the things I've talked about today. I also edit Nursing Open, which is a genuine open access journal. And if you want to contact me, I'll leave that up. That's my email address. You're very welcome to email me. I'm always happy to look at manuscripts, abstracts, anything like that. I'm never inundated, so don't worry about me. That's my Twitter feed if you're really bored. That's my ORCID identification if you want to check my publications and my research record. Really grateful for the invitation once again, and thanks for the generous introduction. Thank you very much, and I look forward to taking some questions. Thank you.